You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Attention to detail and good graphic design make commodity attacks pay. Several Mage Cart campaigns turn out to be the work of one gang. The unfortunate persistence of DDoS for hire services, ransomware's growing sophistication as a class of criminal enterprise, Andrea Little-Limbago from Interos on supply chain attacks and risks. Our guest is Mark Testoni from SAP's NS2 on how COVID-19 has shaped classified work. And hey kids, the Beagle Boys are on a crime spree. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, August 27th, 2020. Group IB says it's been able to link three Magecart JavaScript sniffer campaigns to a single group, which they call UltraRank. UltraRank compromised over 700 sites over 5 years, selling its take in the Valid CC card shop, a well-known criminal market. Group IB threat intelligence analyst Viktor Akurakov said, quote, "The cyber criminal market is offering better quality of service, fine-tuning and simplifying the instruments for solving specific tasks. In the coming years, we will definitely see the growth in the use of this malicious instrument, since many online shops and service providers still neglect their cybersecurity using outdated CMSs that have vulnerabilities." End quote. We've heard over the past week about cyber mercenaries, hackers for hire. These groups or individuals have apparently been hired to collect commercial information on businesses, with law firms and financial services outfits commonly targeted. There are other kinds of illicit services on offer too, like booters or distributed denial of service attacks delivered to paying customers. Security company Radware this morning published a look at the last 2 years of action in the booter criminal market, and their conclusions aren't particularly happy ones. Over that period, law enforcement agencies and companies have worked to take down DDoS for hire operations, and they've succeeded in doing so and in making a number of arrests. But unfortunately, these make only a momentary dent in the DDoS for hire market, and the trend has been consistently upward. Radware points out that people offering booters used to advertise their services by stunt hacking, taking down a site or service to do some arch chest thumping and Bob's your uncle. Well, that's no longer the case, and it's not so much that booter services have grown more professional, but rather that they've sunk to their own level. For one thing, they now infest the gaming subculture, the way half-witted trades in skins and loot boxes do. For another, DDoS code and the IoT botnets are now thoroughly commodified, cheap, available, and with their use adapted to the meanest understanding. There's more. Search engines commonly turn up results for booter services, and they also occupy what many perceive or actually misperceive as a legal gray area. After all, who's to say that you wouldn't want to use a stressor to test your own resilience? Could happen, right? This, of course, is playground lawyering on the level of the widespread opinion that if you took your boat beyond the 12-mile limit, anything would be legal. And anyway, if it popped up in your Google results, how illegal could it be, right? Britain's NCSC has tried to educate people to the fact that using a booter, even, say, against your rivals in Fortnite or Grand Theft Auto, is against the law. But while Radware applauds the NCSC's intentions, there's little sign that denizens of parental basements are really paying attention. It's worth mentioning that it's not just the gaming world that's afflicted by DDoS. Computing reports that New Zealand's NZX stock exchange continues to deal with disruption inflicted from overseas booters. Attacks yesterday made the third day in a row that the exchange had to shut down services. So the booters for hires are the criminal equivalents of delinquents hanging out on street corners, sniping butts and throwing rocks at cars. But ransomware operators? They're more like the mob. Wired takes a look at the dark side ransomware and its operators, whom it sees as corporate and cruel, a distillation of underworld trends toward careful target selection, careful calibration of demands to offer painful but tempting options to pay, and with ruthless reprisal against victims who refuse them. And hey, kids, I mean, kids of a certain age, I guess, ex-kids, if you will. Remember the Beagle Boys? They were a crew of hoodlums, gonifs, and no-goodniks who served as villains in the Mickey Mouse comic books, those old gold key editions. And you remember those. Anywho, the Beagle Boys are back, at least in homophonic form. CISA, NSA, and the FBI have issued a joint warning against a North Korean hacking group they're calling the Beagle Boys. That's boys with a Z, which we're morally certain is an homage to the old Disney villains. The Beagle Boys, the agencies assess, are a subgroup of Pyongyang's Hidden Cobra threat group, which itself overlaps to a large extent the bad actors industry tends to call the Lazarus Group. The Beagle Boys, like their Disney originals, are bank robbers, but they're not a freelancing criminal gang. No, they steal on behalf of the great successor, the dear-respected Marshal Kim Jong-un, his very own self. Unlike their Disney originals, however, they don't drill, blast, or safe-crack their way into vaults, but they loot the banks through hacking. They're responsible for the fast cash ATM looting campaign and other assaults on bank payment systems. Their principal motive is financial gain for a regime that's been unable to deliver economically and that labors under the international sanctions and odium appropriate to a rogue state. But CISA, NSA, and the Bureau point out that the Beagle Boys pose risks that go beyond obvious financial loss. There's also reputational damage, the opportunity costs of increased security, and above all, erosion of the confidence on which the international financial system depends. So far, the Beagle Boys have been fairly successful, but we hope they turn out to be as dim-witted and prone to failure as their Disney originals. But so far, at least, Fast Cash doesn't look like a Mickey Mouse operation. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data.
Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. Those of us who are a certain age grew up laughing at the bumbling antics of a certain Agent 86, Maxwell Smart, on the TV show Get Smart. Pretty sure by the time I was watching it, it was in reruns. Maxwell Smart was a secret agent for the fictional intelligence agency Control, and a running gag on the show came up whenever classified information was under discussion.
Now, here is my plan. And I'm glad we're not in my office, or you would insist on our using the cone of silence.
Oh, I've already taken measures for that, Chief. I brought along the portable cone of silence. It was in my car.
Max, we don't need that. Besides, it doesn't work.
Look, Chief, according to the handbook, you've got to take some security measures if you're going to talk about a plan away from Control headquarters.
All right, Max.
Funny stuff, for sure, but of course, in the real world, secure communications are no laughing matter. A fact that's been brought into focus as the global pandemic has made it more difficult for people who need to discuss classified information to get together face-to-face in secure facilities. Mark Testoni is CEO of SAP's NS2 National Security Arm, and he shares how COVID-19 has reshaped classified work.
Obviously, like everyone else, people that are employed in the intelligence community and parts of defense have been deployed to home. And because of the nature of the current classification of some of the work, it's presented challenges for them to work, and not only them, but even the supporting contractors. We have a number of people who operate either in government facilities or in SCIFs that we own, and it's because of the pandemic, it's changed the whole dynamic. So much like in many office buildings, across business where people are very small numbers are going to work, the same thing has happened in some of these other areas. So it's required some adjustments. And we're still working through some of that.
In the work that you're doing with folks inside the intelligence community, are you finding that they're open to these sorts of evolutions, or are these conversations that you see happening?
We are starting to have them. And we've had a couple of cases where we've actually been able to work, you know, in a very small tactical way to move some work into the unclass environment, some pieces of it. So I'm actually comforted by the fact that we're seeing that. And hopefully when we get through this pandemic, although given what we're witnessing right now, I'm not sure it may be as fast as some people have thought, that we don't just kind of fall back into our own operational reasons, because beyond the pandemic and kind of the productivity issues, there are really longer term issues, as I said earlier, with recruiting, with leveraging commercial technology, that's the business that we're in, that could very much more be enabled if we had a more collaborative, open environment to do a lot of this versus many things being done behind walls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's also second and third order factors. You and I have heard for years about the backlog of clearances and reinvestigations, and there's some work going on there, but we have over 4 million clearances in this country, which is a shocking number to me. Hmm. And if that's more than 1% of the U.S. population, that's a rather large number. Do we really need all that? Do all these organizations need these? And how do we drive change? To me, that's really what's going to be critical. Things like security clearances and SCIFs are what I would consider to be basically symptoms of the larger challenge, which is what do we really need to hide behind walls today and secure? What is really important? If we go back to sources and methods and Humint and those things that are really, or and some of the technical things that are really, really important, let's get those and secure the living dickens out of those. Let's look at some of these other business operations and even the approaches that we use to solve some of the mission operations. And can we do some of the work, 70, 80% of the work outside? If we can do that, we're going to provide better capabilities to the intelligence community. They're going to get them faster. And we won't, when we have work disruptions like this, we won't be suffering.
That's Mark Testoni from SAP's NS2 National Security Arm.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Andrea Little-Limbago. She is the Vice President of Research and Analysis at Interos. Andrea, it's always great to have you back. I want to touch today on supply chain risks, some of the things that you've been tracking when it comes to that. What sort of things are on your radar these days?
Yeah, so there are a couple different areas when it comes to supply chains. And you know, again, supply chains is one of those areas that, you know, for so long, no one really cared that much about. And now it's, you know, front page headlines, and whether it's from, you know, the food supply chain, you know, to more of the manufacturing side, the, you know, the digital supply chain is something that also is starting to garner a lot of attention. And so that's really the area that I'm looking at, sort of is that intersection of both the physical supply chain and the digital supply chain, since, you know, there's just so interwoven right now. And when we think about the supply chains, you know, we think more so about the lack of toilet paper or flour in our food markets, but we don't necessarily, and rightly so, by the way, right now. I mean, that's obviously what hits us you know, on a daily basis. But, you know, the broader issues that have manifest in light of COVID, and even, you know, well before that as well, we're just the notion of third-party risk and, you know, extending that risk modeling into the supply chains as well. And if you think about, like financial institutions, their supply chains are more so on the digital supply chain aspect of it. And so we're seeing that, you know, the digital supply chain intersection with physical supply chains and really looking at, you know, what the range of vulnerabilities are and how to think about risk in that regard. And, you know, I think, you know, in our industry for a while, we've talked about the perimeter being gone and, you know, we've understood what that meant. And, you know, a lot of it, especially now with the distributed workforce and cloud-based systems, you know, that's where most of that discussion goes. But when you think about expanding the perimeter, you know, it's also really important to think about, you know, who your partners are and who you're collaborating with, and not just your, you know, immediate suppliers and those companies, but who are their suppliers and who are their suppliers. And that's where I think a lot of, you know, that's where I'm keeping an eye on and doing, you know, a lot of my research is really looking at that extended supply chain and how to mitigate those risks that may come along with it. The example that I think is unfortunately always given, you know, I think unfairly to Target, but, you know, it's Target in the HVAC system, right? As far as that kind of attack, you know, they're by no means alone or an anomaly. There's the ones that, you know, happen to be a well-known brand. And so that's the example that always gets used. But, you know, supply chain attacks continue to be on the rise. And so, and the reason for that is because you have these companies that do have the resources, spend the resources, they've created very robust security systems. So that makes it, you know, if you're an attacker, you're not going to be going there. You're going to be going to the easier route, which might be either, you know, small company that's not even their initial supplier, but the small company that's supplying a supplier that then, you know, feeds into the larger company. And that might be the easiest pathway to go. And especially during these times now where, with a distributed workforce, and not all companies, you know, companies lessening up on some of the security standards, you know, those might be the way to get in. And so that's why we're continuing to see a rise of supply chain attacks. And so, you know, that's one big area of it. And the other one, it gets into the software and hardware that's used by the companies and where those come from would be another area. And thinking about, you know, ensuring trusted applications and technologies are within your system.
Yeah, you know, and as you and I have talked about the touchy situation that some companies find themselves in particular with China. And I can't help thinking about Apple, who, unlike some other companies who are mostly running in the software world, it strikes me that, you know, Apple has this situation where so much of their business is dependent on hardware that is manufactured in China. And surely, obviously, that affects their relationship, the types of ways that they feel as though they can push back.
You know, we hear a lot about, on the physical side, the reshoring or onshoring. And again, this is especially over the last few months, given the supply chain disruptions that we've seen. And so I think that's one of those things that's going to continue to be a boardroom discussion that, you know, sort of in the past, it was, you know, it doesn't make sense financially. But as geopolitical tensions continue to rise, and as, you know, other countries start to step up and provide some of those same, you know, the same environments for reshoring, and as governments begin to incentivize that movement, you know, I think, you know, Japan is a really good example. Japan has invested billions of dollars to reshore companies from China back to Japan or to another a trusted country. Mm-hmm. So governments are stepping in to help switch that incentive and risk calculus for the companies themselves. And even, you know, and Apple has been moving away, you know, some aspects from China. They've been moving largely to Vietnam. But then in many cases, you know, they're still working with Chinese companies just in Vietnam. So it's not necessarily avoiding the exact same problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, Andrea Little-Limbago, thanks for joining us.
Great. Thank you.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time, keep you informed, and it's kid-tested and mother-approved. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of DataTribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Baziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Errol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpe, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.